Okay. As I told those of you who were around on the first day, I'm excited about this series of shiurim I hope to give this summer. It's a topic in an area that I, frankly, don't know all that much about. I'm learning as I do it. So I don't know if that makes this whole exercise futile, because if I don't know what I'm talking about, there's no point, but I'll try not to say anything before I figured it out. The topic of Zmirot and Piyutim, I became very interested in a few months ago, and the credit for this I have to give to my 7-year-old son, Tzvi, who fell in love with the Zemer that I just handed out, Sama Nafshi. Those of you who learned in MMY probably know that Rabbi Felberman, our Rosh Hashiva, has a particular fondness for this particular Zemer, and there's more copies floating around someplace, and likes to sing it all the time. So my son came to an MMY Shabbaton, and he decided he liked it, so he made me sing it every Friday night for like 2 months after that. I always liked it, but as I began to sing it on a more regular basis, I began to notice that it's really beautiful poetry. Beautiful and deeply profound. And as I was singing it over and over again, I began to notice things about it. And so I decided to look into it, and it's really this Zemer that I got excited about. So now, after today's year, I have to learn some more stuff. But there are a few others that I'm interested in also. I was going to do a whole introduction about the notion of piyut and poetry, and perhaps at some point over the course of summer I will do that. But I thought it might be better to just jump right into it. So I'm not going to do a lengthy introduction now, but just 5 minutes or so of a question. What's the point of poetry and music in the service of Hashem, and particularly poetry? Why are people there's poetry in Tanakh, of course. You're learning Tehillim with Rabbi David, and Tehillim is perhaps the quintessence of biblical poetry. But if it's part of Tanakh, so we view it as Kitvei HaKodesh, and in addition to whatever literary value it has as poetry, it also is filled with all sorts of perhaps infinite layers of meaning that when you're studying Tanakh, you have to look at that way. When you deal with piyutim that were written later on, you're not dealing with Kitvei HaKodesh, you're reading with a poem that somebody wrote. Why do Jews feel it important? Why did rabbis and great Jewish thinkers feel it important to write poetry? And perhaps more directly, why did Jewish communities decide to take those poems and incorporate them either into their tefillah, or particularly the ones we're going to talk about here, to sing them around the Shabbos table? What's the value of poetry? Yeah?
Singing is some kind of uplifting,
Okay, music itself certainly has, I think we all recognize that music itself has a certain emotional effect upon us. The music was used in the Beit HaMikdash itself, of course, right, the Levim. But music doesn't need piyutim, right? The Hasidim developed the idea of the nigun, right, of music without words. And in fact, some Hasidic thinkers really developed the idea that dafka, they sang nigunim without words, because they felt that the words would somehow limit and constrict the spiritual experience that the music can bring about. Okay, so, I mean, one could certainly explore that area. I think we all intuitively, in our culture, I think, recognize the value of music. So fine. So now we know why we want to sing. But why do we need to sing these poems? Why can't we just sing nigunim? What's the point of the poetry? Yeah?
I mean, I think there's something to, like, the co-op and maximizing that. You can just talk, or you can talk musically.
Right.
And
What makes poetry different than prose, though? What makes it different than you when you say talk beautifully? What makes it different when I say something poetically than when I just say it outright, yeah?
Because, like, you're not just saying literally what's going on. You're adding things, like, there's so many different ways to describe it. You can create different moods with it.
That's true.
It could be deeper.
That's true. You can... But after all, even if you use, you know, colorful, descriptive language. What did you just say? You can add to what's going on? I'm not sure that that's what makes it poetry, though. I think often poetry, at least in the type of poetry that we're looking at here, I have to go back to my freshman year in YU, to my literature class, and pull out my notes with Dr. Lee to see whether, you know, the same thing is true for secular or non-Jewish poetry. But a lot of times it's not what the poem says as much as what it doesn't say. A lot of times poetry, at least this type of poetry, piyutim, they use allusions, right? And particularly we'll see, oh, I meant to tell you, I want you to have a Tanakh in front of you for these Yishurim. If you have one around, you might want to get it. Oh, and I left mine upstairs. So, a lot of the reason I'm asking for the Tanakh is that a lot of piyutim will use expressions that are borrowed from Pesukim in Tanakh that are essentially an allusion, a reference to a Pesuk in Tanakh. Lab Dafka, a Pesuk that talks directly about the type of thing that we're discussing. And you see in this Zemer that we're going to study today, we're going to see beautiful examples of this. Or a reference to a Midrash. Or to an idea that's found in Chazal. Or to a Halakha. At least one of the Zmirot that I hope to do with you in future classes, Ma Yedidut, is full of allusions to Hilchot Shabbat. You can learn Halakha by studying the Zemer. But obviously you can learn Halakha much better by studying the Shulchan Aruch. So what's the point of making an allusion, a remez as it were? Sometimes it seems to me, and maybe this is what you mean when you say you can add something and you speak of making it more beautiful, sometimes things are dafka in the subtlety. Dafka when you don't spell out exactly what you mean. When you leave it just as a remez, just as a hint, which of course the danger of a hint is if you don't understand it, it just flies right over your head and you don't understand it. Which is what most people who sing Zmirot have no idea what they're saying. Right? But once you realize what the remez is, it's at times so much more profound because it's not explicitly said. To illustrate this idea, let me give you one example of something that's dafka, not a poem, but something that I find very moving whenever I experience it. In Megillat Esther, okay, on Purim, when we read Megillat Esther in the shul, the minhag, at least in many Ashkenazi communities, of course, the Megillah is read with a certain trum, a certain truck, right? That's the tune or the kind of the cadence of the way the Megillah is read in Ashkenazi communities. However, there are certain psukim in the Megillah that in many communities there's a minhag to change the tune to a different tune. In a few different places, the tune is changed to the tune of Eicha. One of those psukim that's done is, it's very obvious why. In the beginning of Megillah, when we're introduced to Mordechai HaYehudi, we're told, depending how you understand the pasuk, he, or more likely one of his ancestors, was exiled from Yerushalayim, right? Asher haglam Yerushalayim, im hagola asher hagleta, im yechanya melech Yehuda. Right? Mordechai ben Yair ben Kish, ish mini, he comes from there. So when we read that pasuk, the minhag in many communities is they switch the tune and read those few words with the tune of Eicha. Asher hagla mirushalayim. And now, if you know what that tune is, if you're used to going to shul on Purim and you're used to going to shul on Tisha B'Av, as soon as you hear that tune, it causes a shift in gears, a mental shift. And I'm sitting at shul on Purim and everyone's happy and all the kids are in costume and people are, and all of a sudden, I feel like I'm on Tisha B'Av for a second. And that adds depth. I mean, the word said it, Asher hagla mirushalayim. But the use of that tune adds depth to those words that couldn't be done by just adding more words. But there are other minhagim on the night of Purim that are even more subtle. For example, there's another pasuk that in many communities, for a few words, we use the tune of Eicha. But not like that pasuk that explicitly speaks about the destruction of Yerushalayim and we understand why the minhag is to use the word of the tune of Eicha. It's a different pasuk. In the beginning of the Megillah, there's a lengthy description of the party that Achashverosh made. Right? It talks about the beauty of the palace, Tzchur, Karpasu, Techelet, Achuz Bechevle Butz, Biar Gaman. Right? Discusses the floors and the vessels and how everything was. And talks about all the food that they served there. And the Pasuk says, V'hashtia kadat ein ones, V'chelim mikelim shonim. Right? Everyone could drink as much as they want, and everyone had a different type of vessel to drink from, a different type of cup. It wasn't like a standard set of dishes. Everybody had a unique piece of art that they drank from. That's presumably the pshat of that pasuk, right? Vashtiyah kadav inonet v'chelim mikelim shonim. But the minhag, in many places, when they read that pasuk, all of a sudden they use the tune of Eich again. Vashtiyah kadav inonet v'chelim mikelim shonim. What's that for? It's based on a midrash that perhaps many of you are familiar with. The midrash tries to figure out why exactly Ahasuerus made this big party, and according to at least one strand of thought in the midrash, he was celebrating what he thought, that he calculated the 70 years of the Churban, and he miscalculated, he thought that the Nevuah, that Yerushalayim would be rebuilt, wasn't going to come true, and therefore he made this big party to celebrate that, and that the Kelim, in order to show his what he thought was his great victory over Yerushalayim, he used the Kelim that had been taken in captivity from the Beit HaMikdash, and that the Jews who went to the party drank out of the Kelim from the Beit HaMikdash. That's a midrash. The minhag of reciting that pasuk, the Kelim Mikelim Shonim, with the tune of Eicha, is a reference to that midrash. Because if in fact that midrash is correct, or according to that, it doesn't have to be literal, but according to the idea that's being presented to us in that midrash, that party that's being described here is a symbol of and a symptom of the Churban. And if I don't know that midrash, and I'm sitting in shul, if I don't know the tune of Eicha, then this whole thing goes over my head. And maybe I don't even notice that he switched the tune, and if I notice he switched the tune, I have no idea what it means. If I know the tune of Eicha, then as soon as I hear that tune, it has an effect on me. But if I don't know the midrash, I don't understand what it's saying. And I'm confused. Why is he singing this pasuk with the tune of Eicha? But if I know that midrash, and I'm familiar with the idea of the midrash, I don't need to pause the Megillah in order to hear that. But as I read the Megillah and I'm reading the Pshat of the Pesukim, and that tune puts my entire emotional mood, throws me out of Purim into Tisha B'Av, and I recognize the connection, my experience is so much deepened in such a profound way. One more from the same Megillah. The same type of minhag. Perhaps even, to me, whenever I hear the Pasuk, if I'm in a shul and the guy doesn't do this, I get upset. And if he does this, it sends shivers down my spine. The first party, right, Esther invites Haman and Ahasuerosh, and she sends them home, and Ahasuerosh says, what's this about? He says, I'll tell you tomorrow, right? Haman goes home, and he sees Mordechai, and gets upset, he spoke to the whole thing, right? And then the Pasuk tells us that Ahasuerosh couldn't sleep at night. B'layla hu nadidash nat hamelach, so he called to read from the Sefer Zichronot, and he discovered that Mordechai had once done this favor for him, right? You all know the story of Megillah. In many communities, those words, that the king couldn't sleep, are also read in a different tune. Not Eicha. But they read them like this. Balayla hu nadidash nat hamelech. What's that? I'm sorry, this is Ashkenazic minhagim. It doesn't speak Tel Yisheva. The piyutim will. Most of the piyutim, by the way, were written by Sfaradim, you should know. What is that tune? Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Right? And if anything can be crazier than the shift from Purim to Tisha B'Av, and I'm sitting here on Purim, and all of a sudden, Hamelech, I jump on my feet, what's going on? What midrash is that based on? Many people familiar. There's a line of thinking in the midrash. It talks about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is never mentioned in Megillat Esther, right? The only book in Tanakh that doesn't mention the Shem Hashem, I think. But the Midrash says it's not that Hashem's not there, it's based on the idea of Esther min HaTorah Minayin, Hester Panim, right? Then whenever it uses the word Hamelech, whenever it says in Megillah Hamelech Ahasuerosh, that refers to Ahasuerosh himself, but the Midrash says that if the Megillah uses the word Hamelech without saying Hamelech Ahasuerosh, just Hamelech Stam, it really refers to Hashem. So Balayla hu nadidash nat Hamelech, the Melech couldn't sleep, right? Now, what does that mean? Am Yisrael sitting there in Shushan and they think they're going to be destroyed. Mordechai, in a desperate attempt, told Esther she has to go in. Esther herself doesn't know what's going on, right? Everything looks bleak. Balayla hu nadidash nat hamelech. That pasuk has two levels of meaning. The pshat of the pasuk clearly refers to Ahasuerosh. But the midrash says there's another melech who's never asleep. And that melech is watching out for Am Yisrael. when you hear that, again, if someone would get up and give a shiur before the Megillah and point this out, okay, fine, you need to learn that. And if you haven't learned the Midrash, again, then this minhag doesn't do anything for you. If anything, it confuses you. But if you know the Midrash, it's just so emotionally powerful because it's not spelled out, because it's done subtly, right? There's a remez. When I hear that word, HaMelech, that has a whole association for me because I've experienced Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. And I know when I hear that tune, immediately it calls in my mind a whole range of associations, of mood, right? A mood that to actually accomplish, I begin on Rosh Chodesh Elul and I work on myself and I work on myself and we go say Slichot and everyone, right? By the time you stand in Shul on Rosh Hashanah, you've gone through a lengthy process, right? You're not at that point emotionally. On Purim, nor should you be. But when you hear that tune, it jostles something in your mind, right? Who's that Melech? Who's that Melech that can't sleep, right? So I just give these examples as a way to try to explain the power of poetry. And again, perhaps at some point I'll go into these ideas more, but I want to focus on this zemer now. And you'll see that this zemer is filled with allusions. I'm not sure I found all of them. Maybe the ones I completely missed. Some of them I found. Okay, before I get into the zemer. Where did I find out there? I used a number of perushim, which I guess I'm not saying b'shem omro because I don't remember where they are. But there's a number of books that I found in the yeshiva library in the gush with perushim on the zmirot. Entire books filled with perushim on zmirot. So if you ever want to study this, you should know that there's at least a small library of literature out there. There's also a website I found, piyut.org.il. Fascinating. Not only can you read piyutim on there, you can read about the piyutim, you can read articles analyzing them, and I found one article by some woman named Sarah Friedland Ben Arza. I have no idea who she is, but she wrote a nice piece on this. And you can even listen to some of the piyutim in all sorts of different tunes. They have maybe 20 different tunes for Kari Bon from different communities, the way it was sung in Germany, the way it was sung in Iraq, the way it was sung in Tunisia, the way it was sung in... Fascinating stuff. So, anyway... So with the help of some of these, and some of the things I discovered on my own, and I'm sure there are things I missed. But let's take a look at this zimmer. Some general observations. I guess, should we read it aloud together one time? Let's read it out loud one time. I'd sing it, but we'll leave that for Shabbos. Sama nashi lelokim lekel chai, libi v'sari yiranu lekel chai. That's a refrain that runs through the whole thing, right? Kel echad b'ra'ani. I'm going to read it. I want you to just think of what you notice as we're going through it, and then tell me any observations you have, anything you've noticed as we read it. Kel echad b'ra'ani, v'amar chai ani, ki lo yir'ani ha'adam v'chai. I won't read the refrain each time. Bara kol b'chokhma, be'etza uvimzima, me'od ne'elama, me'enei kol chai. Ram al kol kvodo, kol pe yechave hodo, baruch asher v'yado nefesh kol chai. Hivdil ninei tam, Chukim lehorotam, asher ya'ase otam ha'adam v'chai. Mi ze yitztadak, nimshal le'avak dak, emet ki lo yitztadak lefanecha kol chai. Belev yetzer chashuv, kidmut chamat achshuv, ve'eichacha yashuv habasar hechai. Nesogim im avu, umidarkam shavu, terem yishkavu beit moed lekol chai. Al kol ahudecha, kol pe tiyachadecha, poteach et yadecha, umasbia lechol chai. Zechor ahabat kedumim, v'hachayei nirdamim, v'karev hayamim, asher ben yishai chai. Re'ei legveret emet, shifcha noemet, lo ki b'nei chameit, uv'ni hachai. This next stanza you'll see is questionable. Halo chelkecha merosh, chelek damot rosh, Shvoch af al rosh hasair hacha. Ekod al api, ve'efros lecha kapi, et eftach pi, benishmat kol chai. Observations. What can you tell me about this piyut? What do you see? What strikes you? Anything? Yes.
These verses end in chai.
Okay, right? There's a thread running through it. Chai, 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 chai. Right? Sama nafshi lelukim lekel chai, libi b'sari yirani lekel chai, and each bayit, each stanza ends with chai. Yes? Who do you see hinted at here?
So, I don't know on my own, but I heard
What's a nin? A nin is a great. Nin literally is a great grandson. It's ben nechet nin, but obviously it can also be used to mean descendants, right? And correct. Who's Tam? Yaakov, right? That's another example of an allusion, right? You say Tam. Tam is Yaakov is Tam. So the Ninei Tam would be, you say the Shvatim, or perhaps all of us. We're all Ninei Tam. Okay? That's one. Okay? Could be. We'll see. I was gonna leave that for later, but yes, definitely could be. What else is alluded to in that verse? Ki b'nei chameit v'ni achai? Right? That's Mishpat Shlomo. Right? Remember when the two women came to him? Right? What it means, we'll have to figure out. Right? But that's a quote. That pasuk is a quote. Lo ki b'nei chameit v'ni achai. The Navi tells us in Sefer Melachim, right? Shmuel. Melachim. Sefer Melachim. One of the examples of Shlomo Melch judged people, right? These two women came to him with a fight. Two Nashim Zonot, actually, that they each had a baby. They were together in a house, and one was sleeping, and she claimed that the other one's baby died, and she switched the babies, and she woke up in the morning and found her baby dead, and said, it wasn't really my baby, it was really the other one's baby. And said, no, lo ki b'necha lo yitavniyacha, and they went to Shlomo, right? We know how Shlomo solved that, right? But he said, take a sword, cut the baby in half, and the mother that said, no, let the other one have it, he knew that was the real mother, right? What's that doing there? We'll see. But that's clearly a reference to that, right? Okay, and Ruthie also notices something that I didn't notice originally. Gveret and Shifcha, in that verse, right? We have a place in Tanakh where we have a Gvira and a Shifcha. And that's in the story of Sarah and Hagar, the first time, right? When Hagar became pregnant, Sarah couldn't become pregnant, so she gave Hagar to Avraham. She became pregnant, and it says in the Torah, in Bereshit, what was that? Parshat Lech Lecha, Perek Tet Vav, V'Sarai Eshet Avram Lo Yodala, V'Lash Shifcha Mitzrit Shema Hagar. Okay, and then it says in Pasuk Gimel, V'Tikach Sarai Eshet Avram Et Hagar Mitzrit Shifchatan. She gave her to Avraham. V'Yavo El Hagar V'Tahar V'Teira Ki Harata V'Tikal Gvirta Be'Ineha. Okay, so Sarai is called the Gvira. V'Tomer Sarai El Avram Chamasi Alecha Anochi Natati Shifchati B'Chekecha. Right? And later on, the whole rest of this parsha here, later on the Malach comes to Hagar and he says, Shuvi el Gvirtech. Sarah is called the Gvira, and Hagar is called the Shifcha. So Ruthie notices Shifcha and Gvira, or Gveret, in the same, that seems to be a reference to that. We have them, and we have the Mishpat Shlomo from thousands of years later, thrown in the middle of the Zemer, and we don't know what it means. Okay? Any other references you see? Who wrote the Zemer? It actually says so. But if it didn't say so in the front, you could tell who wrote it. Right? Avraham ben Ezra, who you know perhaps as the Ibn Ezra from his Rabbi Avraham ibn Ezra. He lived in a little bit about his life, which is relevant to this. Fascinating person to study in Jewish history, if you're interested, by the way. The Avraham ibn Ezra was born in Spain in the 12th century. If you know anything about the history of Spain at that time. Spain was at war, was conquered. It was a Muslim country, had been conquered, or part of Spain was conquered by the Christians. And then there was an invasion of radical Muslim tribes from the south, and Jews had to leave the southern part of Spain as well. So Ibn Ezra actually spent the first maybe, I think, 30 or even, no, I think close to the age of 50 even. First part of his life, he lived in Spain, in the Muslim part of Spain, and after that he spent the rest of his life wandering around Christian countries. When he was driven out of Spain, he went first to northern Spain and then to Italy. And there he heard about some attacks that those Muslims had on the Jews of Spain. He wrote some poems lamenting the destruction of the communities that he had escaped from by the Muslims. And then the rest of his life he was in Italy, he was in France, he was in England. So we know him as a parshan in the Torah. He wrote actually two different Perushim. In the Torah Chaim there you have Perush HaKatzar and Perush HaAroch, and he also wrote many, many, many poems. And as was the custom, a style, very often he puts his name in the, so it's actually spelled out here, Avraham ben Ezra. Hmm? 12th century, I think he lived into the 13th, if I'm not mistaken. Can you We traditionally sing this on Friday night, but if you read it carefully, it's clear that it wasn't originally meant to be a song at the table Friday night, but it was actually designed to be used in a different context. Can you figure out where? Look at the last line. Yeah. It was intended clearly as it ends, Eit ki eftach pi v'nishmat kol chai. It was intended to be used, and many communities had a minhag, which is halachically questionable. Many communities had a minhag, both Ashkenazic and Sephardic communities, Ashkenazic more than Sephardim, but of inserting poetry into various parts of the tefillah, even into Shmon Esrei and even into Kriyat Shema in certain communities, and certainly into Psukei Dezimra. This was intended to be read in Psukei Dezimra on Shabbat, right before the tefillah of Nishmat Kol Chai. And therefore it ends as an introduction. I will bow down and stretch out my hands to you. Eight at the time, ki eftach pi v'nishmat kol chai. And from there you meant to go into the Nishmat. A few other things of introduction about this Zemer. First of all, you should know, in the course of trying to read up about it a little bit, I saw quoted a number of times from a sefer called Chut HaMishulash. I saw quoted from that sefer that the Chatan Sofer was very, very impressed with this particular Zemer. Ad kidei kach, that he claimed that it's full of deep ideas of Kabbalah, which I found interesting because the Chatan Sofer was a Kabbalist. To the best of my knowledge, the Ibn Ezra was not. Maybe the Chatan Sofer knew something that I don't, and that the historians don't. But to the best of my knowledge, Ibn Ezra, or maybe he wasn't, but he saw the same truth through his lens that the Chatan Sofer through the lens of Kabbalah. But that's what I saw quoted, full of deep ideas of Kabbalah, and he's convinced, the Chasam Sofer said, that Ibn Ezra must have written it with Ruach HaKodesh, whatever that means, I don't know, but it's certainly a strong endorsement. And that apparently the Chasam Sofer used to sing this on Friday night before Kiddush. After Eshet Chayil, he used to sing this piyut. So I guess it's not just Rabbi Felberman and my son Tzvi and myself who found a deep liking to this, but apparently the Chasam Sofer also saw something very special in this. There's a poetic problem here. If he wanted to put his name, Avraham ben Ezra, into the first line of each stanza, so the words Avraham ben Ezra are spelled with an odd number of letters. And poetically, particularly musically, certainly to the tune we sing it with. I don't know what other tunes have been written, and I don't know if he had a tune in mind per se, but it's usually good to have an even number of stanzas. Now, there is one stanza that I marked off here in pen on the page, the one that begins with a hey towards the end, that seems to be somewhat questionable. Okay, in most of the text that you see, in most of the printed Zmira that you'll find, that stanza is not in there. And indeed, the name Avraham ben Ezra, it doesn't belong there. Okay? However, that stanza does appear in certain texts, and apparently appears in some very rather early texts. For example, the Machzor Vitri, which is from the 12th or 13th century, has this piyut in it, and it has that line. Now, it could be that the question of that line has to do with the issue we were talking about here. On the one hand, people might feel it doesn't belong there because, after all, the name, it doesn't fit. If it's spelling out his name, what's that hey doing there? On the other hand, if he was a poet and he wanted to give it the balance of an even number of stanzas, with a little creativity, you could spell the name Ezra with a hey as well as an alternative spelling. So he might have stuck it in there in order to give it the poetic balance, in which case perhaps it really does belong there, again, supported by the fact that it's in earlier texts also. Could be. I have the... have a different reading on it, which I do think it belongs there, but for a different reason, which I'll tell you at the end. In any case, most of the texts don't have that stanza in there, but there is another stanza also. I saw quoted in a different book that I looked at. They quoted Bavovner from Bnei Brak, who spoke about his Rebbe, Rav Meir Shapiro of Lublin. You've heard of Rav Meir Shapiro, the Rashi of Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, the one who started the Daf Yomi. I saw in this little Perush on Zmirot that I have, that was written, you know, nowadays, the author of this little Perush that I found quoted Rav Vozner, who said that his Rebbe, Rav Meir Shapira, had written on his own an additional stanza to add here. Again, I guess it helped round it out even number. I won't tell you the stanza now, I'll tell it to you at the end. But when I read this, just a little note, and it wasn't explained, it just said the following comment. It said that Rav Wagner quoted that Rav Meir Shapiro wrote an additional stanza. It quoted the stanza, and it said he used to sing it, Rav Meir Shapiro, every Friday night, with the addition of the stanza that he wrote. And on the last Friday night before he died, he didn't sing that stanza. What am I supposed to do with that? What does that mean? That's all it said. Rav Wagner says that Rav Meir Shapiro wrote an additional stanza to this poem. He sang it every Friday night with the additional stanza, and the last Friday night before he died, he sang the piece, but he didn't sing that stanza. I think I have an idea, but at the end. Okay. Now, with all this introduction and all this background, let's look at the Zemar. Let's start, first of all, with the refrain. Sama nafshi l'elokim l'kel chai, libi u'bisari yiraninu l'kel chai. The Ibn Ezra did not write those words. Where do they come from? Tehillim. Is it a pasuk in Tehillim? It's actually two different pasukim. It's half of one pasuk and half of a different one. Okay? Let's just briefly look at the context of those pasukim. The first half is in Membet Gimel. Read it in its context. L'matzeach matzkil ivnei korach. Ke'ayal ta'arog al afikei mayim. Kei nashi ta'arog elecha elokim. Tzam'a nashi le'elokim l'kel chai. Matai avo ve'irae p'nei elokim. Hayta lidi mati lechem yomam v'layla ve'emo elai kol hayom a'ye elokecha. What's the context here? What is David HaMelech saying, or the Bnei Korach? What are the Bnei Korach saying in this Zemer? Just in the Pesukim we just read? There's one theme that's running through those Pesukim. Longing, right? Desire for Hashem. Ke'ayal tarog al afikei mayim. Right? An ayal, a deer running through the desert, thirsting for water. And it detects that in the distance someplace there's a spring of water. It is drawn to it. Kain nashi tarog elech elokim. Sama nashi. The thirst, like the physical thirst that the ayal has for the mayim, my soul thirsts for Hashem. Matai avo, when can I come ve'irae p'nei elokim? I cry, yomam v'layla, dimati lechem yomam v'layla. As I say all day long, kol yom ayei elokecha. I'm searching for Hashem. I'm looking for Hashem. I'm longing for Hashem. Thirsting. Matai avove irade. And the second half, so Ibn Ezra clocked out half of that pasuk. And again, he's expecting that you know the perek in Tehillim, and in addition to the word itself, you understand the context. And also, the second half is from Tehillim Pei Dalid, which is also, by the way, interestingly enough, Tehillim Pei Dalid is Lamatzeach Alakitit Livnei Korach Mizmor. It's also in the group of Tehillim that are authored by the Bnei Korach. And here again, it's in Pasuk Gimel. Lamatzeach Alakitit Livnei Korach Mizmor Mayididot Mishkinotecha Hashem Tzvakot Nichtzifa V'gam Kaltan Nafshi Lechatzrot Hashem Livi Uvisari Yiranenu Elkel Chai. Right? Nichtsefa, again, kisufim, desire. The same idea. Libi uvisari yiranenu l'kelcha. And by plucking these two halves of Pesukim out and forming them the refrain of his poem, what do we have here? Another way the Ibn Ezra has it. Tzamanashi l'adokim, I thirst for Hashem l'kelchai. Libi uvisari, my entire body which is thirsting for Hashem, yiranenu l'kelchai. So again, the notion of chai clearly emphasized here, as Shoshana noted, and we'll talk about that. Tara? Oops.
It's okay.
Why did I call you Shoshana?
I don't know. Flip of the tongue.
Okay. Sarah. Okay. Sarah. Sorry about that. So anyway, and the thirst for Hashem, again, the thirst, which is, of course, a physical sensation, which is being used here metaphorically, he tries to indicate that it actually has almost a physical representation. Libi u'bisari. My entire being is filled with longing for Hashem, desire for Hashem. And that's the refrain that repeats after every single stanza. Tzama nafshi l'keil chai, libi u'bisari yiranimu l'keil chai. Now the poem begins. I think that the stanzas that we have here can be divided into three sections. Okay? The first section is the first three batim. Kel echad ra'ani ve'amar chai ani ki lo yir'ani ha'adam v'chai. Hashem appears here as the Borei who said chai ani. Now what do the words chai ani mean? Okay, first of all, the literal meaning of those words, I am alive, or perhaps even, I am life. In Tanakh, though, the expression, what does the expression Chai Hashem mean? It's a type of Shua, and in Tanakh, Hashem himself swears that way. Chai Ani, Hashem says in numerous places. As I live, by my life. Right? And why is that a Lashon Shua? The Mefarshim explained, because when you say Chai Hashem, as certain as it is that God is alive, which is, of course, the ultimate certainty, this will happen, or this is true, or whatever it is. So Hashem swore by my life, ki lo yir'ani ha'adam v'chai. Now that's an interesting paradox. Hashem is the Borei, the source of all life, and he swears by his life, by the fact that he is life, ki lo yir'ani ha'adam v'chai. Tzama nafshi le'elokim. I thirst for Hashem. And how does that pasuk end in the Tehillim? Tzama nafshi le'elokim l'keil chai, matai avo ve'eira'eh p'nei Elokim. Right? And again, the second half of the pasuk is not in the field, but you're supposed to know it. When you hear the words tzama nafshi le'elokim, it's supposed to conjure up in your mind the entire context of that pasuk. The Mishorer in Tehillim is asking, matai avo ve'eira'eh p'nei Elokim? And how is he answered here in the Pilut? Chai ani, ki lo yirani ha'adam v'chai. The man is sitting here yearning for Hashem, and he's being told, it's closed off. Hashem is the source of life, but if you come too close, you die. So as much as you long for Hashem, you can't approach it. And the same theme is continued. Bara kol b'chokhma b'eitza u'v'nzima. Everything was done with wisdom. Me'od ne'elama ne'enei kol chai. Wisdom that is beyond our comprehension. Ram al kol kvodo. Hashem is lofty. Hashem is transcendent. Hashem is above and beyond us. Unapproachable. And all we can do is stand down here at the bottom. Kol pe yechaveh hodo. We can sing His praises. Baruch asher biyado nefesh kol chai. But God is distant, removed. The source of all life for which we thirst and long, completely unapproachable. It's like hit you like a brick wall, or like you hitting a brick wall. Matai avo ve'irae p'nei Elokim? When can I come? Tzama nafshi Elokim? You can't. Chai ani, ki lo yir'ani ha'adam v'chai. Yes. Ki lo yir'ani ha'adam v'chai. By the way, where did those psukim come from, by the way? He didn't make that up either. Where?
Oh, it's from Moshe wants to see him.
When? In the Nikra Tatsur. When's that? After Chet HaEgel. Sefer Shmos. The people sin, Hashem is going to destroy them. Moshe begs the Hashem to forgive them. Shmot Lamed Gimel Yud Zayin. I mean, that pasuk is in Yud Zayin. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayom Hashem Moshe, gam et hadavar hazeh asher dibarta yaseh, ki matzat lachem b'inai v'yadach Hashem. Vayomar hareini na et kivodecha. Right? After Hashem showed His rachamim to Moshe, Moshe asked, hareini na et kivodecha. Vayomer, ani avir kol tuvi al panecha, v'karati v'shem Hashem lefanecha, v'chanoti et asher achon, v'richamti et asher arachem, vayomer lo tuchal lirot et panai, ki lo yirani ha'adam v'chai. Direct quote in the Zemer. Vayomer Hashem hinei makom iti v'nitzavta al atzur, v'ya ba'avur kvodi v'samticha v'nikrat atzur, v'sakoti chapi alecha adovri, v'asiroti et kapi v'ra'ita et achorai, ufanai lo yeira'u, you will see my back, you will not see my front. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, who basically asked the same question David HaMelech asked, or B'nai Korach rather, in that Zemer, Matai avo v'ira'et pnei Elokim? Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem directly, instead of sitting and longing, right? Matai avo, Moshe Rabbeinu went right up to Hashem and said to him, Hareini na'at kvodecha. And Moshe Rabbeinu was turned down. Ki lo yirani adam b'chai, even you Moshe can't see me. You Moshe, I'm going to do something I wouldn't do for anyone else. V'samticha v'nikrat atzur, I'm going to cover you with my hand, I'll pass by, you'll see my back, you won't see my face. But lo yirani adam b'chai. Me'od ne'alama rufi, right? He's removed, he's distant. Ramal kol kivodo. So again, the Paitan is longing for Hashem, is desiring to come close to Hashem, and he runs into a brick wall. God is unapproachable, God is removed, God is distant. But then the next stanza, which begins the second section. His deal, Ninetam, right? Ruthie already told us who the Ninetam are, that's us. What did Hashem do for us? Hivdil Ninetam. He differentiated us, he separated us, he distinguished us. Why? Chukim lahorotam asher ya'aseh otam ha'adam v'chai. First of all, that's also a quote, or an allusion. Asher ya'aseh otam ha'adam v'chai. Anyone know from where? Yeah. I had to do a computer search to find it. Something up at your bucky. But that's where it is. Correct, Ariel. Vayikra, Yudchet, hey. Ushmartem et chukotai ve mishpatai asher yaseh otam ha'adam v'chai b'alem. Ani Hashem. Ushmartem et chukotai ve mishpatai. Keep my mitzvot, asher yaseh otam adam v'chai b'chai. And by the way, just parenthetically, that pasuk, this pasuk has an important halakhic significance. Anyone know what halakha, at least according to one opinion of the Gemara, we learned from this pasuk? This pasuk, according to one opinion of the Gemara, is the source for the major halakhic principle that pikuach nefesh overrides almost all the mitzvot in the Torah, with very few exceptions, right? We all know if it's Shabbat, right, and somebody, God forbid, is sick or something like that, and you need to, or whatever, and you need to do something to potentially save a person's life, we know that you violate almost any mitzvah in the Torah. Why? Because it says in this pasuk, asher yaseh otam adam v'chai b'hem, says the Gemara, v'chai b'hem, v'lo she'yamut b'hem. Mitzvah are meant to bring life and not bring death, and therefore if keeping a mitzvah would endanger someone's life, then you don't keep the mitzvah. And by the way, Yechezkel HaNavi also picked up on this pasuk. Again, I know this thanks to my computer search to find the pasuk in the first place. It popped up also in Yechezkel. In Yechezkel Perek Chav, which obviously is a reference to the pasuk in Vayikra. The Navi Yechezkel, famous parak in Yechezkel, by the way. Very important parak. Perek Chav in Yechezkel, Vayhi b'shana shvi'it, etc. Vayhi dvar Hashem elai l'mor, ben Adam, daber zikmei Yisrael v'mart elehem. Koma Hashem Elokim, halidrosh, Oti atem ba'im chai ani, is that expression again? Im idaresh lachem, Yom Hashem Elokim. You want to find me, you can't find me. Why? Later on, it says, I took you out of Mitzrayim and everything. And it says here, for example, in Perek Yudimel, Vayamru vi beit Yisrael b'midbar, v'chukotai lo halachu. Ve mishpatai ma'atsu, asher yaseh otam adam v'chai b'hem. Ve shabtotai yilu me'er tzare. And Hashem says, I gave you mitzvot to live by them, and you didn't eat. So now go back to this pasuk, to the poem now. Hivdil ninetam,
חוקים להורותם אשר יעשה אותם אדם וחי.
אף וחי בהם, but to end with וחה. What does it mean, חוקים להורותם? It's as if it said, להורותם חוקים.
הבדיל מנתן, השם distinguished, separated,
בני ישראל.
Why?
להורותם חוקים, to teach them laws,
laws,
מצוות, אשר יעשה אותם האדם בחר.
Now put this fourth stanza of the poem up against the first stanza. אשר לא יראני האדם וחי, הבדיל מנתם חוקים להורותם אשר יעשה אותם אדם וחי. If you approach God, you die. Except if you approach God in a certain way. You want to live? What do? Do mitzvot.
אשר יעשה אותם האדם וחי.
This stanza is the, as it were, the antidote.
What's the term in literature? Nigud. When one, there's a term in literature, right? When one thing contrasts, isn't there like a more, what? Maybe something like that. I don't know. Anyway, you know what I mean, right? So if, yeah. What does it mean, Kilo Yirani Adam Bachai?
No, like, you said, you die.
So, for example, I mean, what does that mean in practical terms?
Yeah.
In Tanakh, we have the story of, what's the name, Uzzah, right, who touched the Aron and died, right? If you enter the Kodesh Kodashim, you can die. Right? If you go up on Har Sinai, right? Said in the Torah, right? And that's, you know, The idea being that Hashem is so removed from us, we can't approach Him. But He did give us a way.
So after the opening part of the poem, where we're presented with this situation, where man knows that the source of his life, the source of his existence is Hashem, and therefore he longs for Hashem, Sam'a nafshi le'elokim mekel chai, and he's asking that question, Matai avo ve'eira'eh? Pnei Elohim, and he's shut down with that slamming. No, God swears by His own life. Chai ani ki lo yirani Adam b'chai. There's an antidote. Hivdil minetam. God then took a representative or a certain section of His people, of that He created, of humanity.
Chukim lahorotam asher yaaseotam Adam b'chai.
And He gave you the answer. You want to know matai avo ve'ira'e p'nei Elokim? The answer is, asher yaseh otam hadam b'chai b'ha. Do the mitzvot, they will bring you the life that you long for. But then, there's a problem. What's the problem? We now have the method. What are we supposed to do if we want to achieve this? If we want to quench our thirst for Hashem, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to live by Hashem's mitzvot. It's all laid out for us, right?
But there's a problem.
Mi ze yitzdak? Nimshal ke'avak dak emet ki lo yitzdak lefanecha kol kach. All you have to do is keep all the mitzvot in the Torah and you'll accomplish your goal. You'll reach what you're looking for. You'll reach life. You'll approach God. But there's only one problem. Nobody can do that. Ki lo yitzdak lefanecha kol chai. Now this next one took me a long time to figure out what in the world this means. Belev yetzer chashuv kidmut chamat achshuv ve'eichach hayashuv ha'basar achai. Does anyone in this room know what a chamat achshuv is? Me neither. But now I did. But I went crazy looking for this. I asked anybody I know, what chamat achshuv? I looked it up in dictionaries. I couldn't find it. Until, to my great embarrassment, in looking up a perush on this nemara, I found out it's a pasuk in Tehillim. Where in Tehillim? Where in Tehillim is it? Kuf Mem. Take a look at this. Tehillim Kuf Mem.
למנצח מזמור לדוד.
חלצני השם מאדם רע, מאיש חמסים תנצרני. חלצני השם, rescue me, מאדם רע, מאיש חמסים תנצרני. Save me from the evil people, the violent people. אשר חשבו רעות בלב, כל יום יגורו מלחמות. Very relevant psukim to the ish chamasim, asher yaguru milchamot. And I leave that as a poetic illusion for what's going on right now. Now these evil people, shanenu l'shonam kemo nachash chamat achshuv tachat tzvateinu sela. Nachash chamat achshuv. Apparently, I looked up then in the Mefarshim, apparently this is a type of a poisonous snake, chamat achshuv. And in Tehillim, this Nachash Chamat Achshu, this poisonous snake, is used as a metaphor for these evil people that David HaMelech, in this zemer, is asking to be saved from. So he borrowed the expression Chamat Achshu from this parak in Tehillim, but here it's not a metaphor for evil people. Here it's a metaphor for something else. What's it a metaphor for? Belev Yetzer Chashuv Kidmot Chamat Achshu.
The Yetzer Hara.
The Yetzer Hara.
Which makes sense, because like the snake from...
Well, good. I didn't even think of that. The Yetzer Hara is the Nachash. Very good. Very good. She just discovered another illusion in here. Mi ze yitzadak? Who can stand up before Hashem and say, I am tzadik? Emet ki lo yitzadak lefanecha kocha. And you know why? Because believe there's a Yetzer. Chashuv kidmut chamat achshuv. Like that chamat achshuv, like that nachash, that we all have inside of us, a yetzer hara. Now, ve'echacha yashuv habasar hachai. What in the world is that? That's also a scriptural allusion. Anyone know where that's from? Echacha, yashuv basar hachai. Nobody knows? Context of any sort? No. Although it's midrashically connected to Tchiyat Metim. You ready? You ready for something that appears out of left field? Tzara'at. Here we go. Tzara'at. Vayikra. Eifo ze? Yud Gimel Tzad Zayin. Okay, we're deep in the middle of the psukim that we all just read through and don't really understand, right? All the detailed descriptions of the different types of tzara'at and the different colors, if the skin turns this color and that color, if it has hair, it doesn't have hair, and how the Kohen's to diagnose whether it's tzara'at or not, is Parshat Tazria. We have here the following. Vayikra, Yud Gimel. Let's start back a few psukim earlier. Vayikra Yud Bet. Okay, there's a nega here. A person has some kind of a wound or a blemish that could be tzara'at or it could not be tzara'at. There's a law that, by the way, is fascinating in its own right. And if you do learn about tzara'at, you got to ask yourself what in the world this means. Fascinating din. Pasuk Yud Bet. Im paroach tifrach hatzara'at ba'or, if the tzara'at, if the nega spreads throughout the skin, v'chisita hatzara'at et kol or hanega, me'rosho v'ad raglav l'chol marei in a kohen. Let's say a person comes to a kohen afflicted with a skin condition that could be tzara'at, and the kohen examines him and finds that the nega has become so large that it actually covers the person's entire body, from head to foot. The person's entire body is covered by this nega. Fascinating. Again, what that means, I leave for some other time. A little nega this big is tzara'at. It covers your whole body, it's tahor, it's not tzara'at. But Uvayom hiraot bo basar chai itma. If it then begins to shrink, and some basar chai shows up, basar chai therefore means what? Living flesh which is not sarach. So then he becomes tameh. V'ra'ah koreinat ha-basar ha-chai v'tim'o ha-basar ha-chai tamehu tsara'atu o'chi yashuv ha-basar ha-chai v'nefak l'avan uva'a l'akoyim. There's the expression. Ki yashuv ha-basar ha-chai. The Ibn Ezra, when he wrote the Zemer, and he stuck in those words, v'eich ha-chai yashuv ha-basar ha-chai, he was quoting this pasuk, yashuv ha-basar ha-chai. But what? What is the connection? What's tsara'at? What's tsara'at? Basar chai is basar that does. It may cause tuma, but it causes tuma only because the nega is now a nega. The basar hakai is the basar that doesn't have the nega on it, right? What's tzarat? First of all, you said you thought this was talking about tchiyat hametim. I told you it's not. But mitzora is chashuv kemet. That's what I meant when I said that you're not completely wrong, right? Person who has tzarat is considered dead. Basar chai, therefore, is living flesh. What's tzarat? Tzarat is a disease that, according to Chazal, is caused by what? That's one opinion. It's caused by chet. A lot of doctor lashon hara, by the way. Everyone knows that. They're different opinion what chet it is. But it's a physical representation of a spiritual malady. Now read the poem again. Mize yitzdadak nimshal la'avak dak emet. Ki lo yitzdak lefanecha kol chai. Hashem gave us chukim lehorotam asher yaseh otam adam lechai. He gave us the answer. He gave us what we were looking for. Do the mitzvot. But there's a problem. We can't do the mitzvot. Nobody's capable. Why? Because b'leiv yetzer chashuv kidmat chamat achshuv. Each one of us has this evil yetzer, this poisonous snake inside of us that destroys us. Mitzvot bring life, the Yetzer Hara brings death, the Eichachai Yashuv of Asar Achai. How are we going to get rid of the Tzara'at? How are we going to bring back the life? Mitzvot bring life, but the Yetzer Hara brings death. The Eichachai Yashuv of Asar Achai. And the answer here again comes, as it were, from Shammai. In the same way that 3 lines ago there was an utter despair, and it's closed down. And the answer came through mitzvot. But we realize we're falling to the brink of despair again because it's impossible to keep the mitzvot. Comes the following. Nisogim im avu umidar kam shavu. Terem yishkavu beit moed b'chochai. Nisogim. What does it mean to? A seget. Nasogu. To retreat. To turn back. From what? Umidarkam shavu. Shuvah. Even if there's chet, there's a solution to that as well. That's called shuvah. It's possible. You want to know Eichachai Yashuv HaBasar Achai? You know that mitzvot are the path to Hashem. And you're frustrated and demoralized because believe Yetzer Chashuv. Eichachai Yashuv HaBasar Achai. You feel that you're being destroyed like tzara'at by the poison of chet. There's a solution. It's possible to change. Perhaps, but it's possible to do tshuva. What's terem yishkavu beit moed l'kolchai? That's also a pasuk. The expression beit moed l'kolchai is based on a pasuk in Iyov. If you want the reference, I won't read it with you now, but the reference, you want to just write it down so you can look it up if you want, is Lamed Chafgimo in Iyov. Anyone want to take a guess at what those words mean? Beit moed l'kolchai? What's Mo'ed? No, it doesn't come from the word Echad. It actually comes from the word Va'ad, believe it or not. The Vav is part of the Shoresh. We have Mo'ed, to us it means often Chagim, but
It's not really what the word means. There's also the ohel moed. What's lehit va'ed? To meet, right? Moadim are times when we meet Hashem. Beit moed lekol chai. You know what? Maybe we should look up the pasuk in Yod. Not a pleasant one. Lamed chaf gimel. Yov lamed chaf gimel. Ki yadati mavet tishiveni uveit moed lekol chai. I know Hashem, mavet tishiveni, eventually you're going to turn me back to death, beit moed lekolcha. The house which is waiting to be met by all living things. What's that? It's a keder. Misogim im avu. By the way, now you'll notice something, okay? As you travel through Yerushalayim, there's something else that I've seen in this city that sends shivers down my spine, if you know what it is. It's also a bit of a poetic reference. It fits very much with the Yerushalmi character. The people who built the modern city of Yerushalayim, the old timers. You go to Sanhedria. The intersection of Rehov Bar Ilan and Rehov, I think Shmuel Navi, where it becomes Golda Meir over there. There's a big funeral parlor. Big Beit Halvayot. One of the places where they do Levayot. And inscribed, it's right up on the hill, you can see it's on that major intersection there. And inscribed on the wall of this Beit HaVayot are the words, Beit Moed Lekol Chai. That's what it says. Nothing else. Beit Moed Lekol Chai. But it's a very powerful message. Sooner or later, hopefully later, everybody's going there. To that building or something like it. Based on the pasuk in Yod, perhaps they also were thinking of the Zemer. Nisogim im avu, umidarkam shavu, terem, what's terem? Yishkavu beit moed lekol chai. Why you still before they lie down in the grave. In other words, so here, the constant refrain of chai, right, it's being used in an ironic sort of sense, right? The whole period is everything's life, 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 life. Here the Beit Moed Lekol Chai is the end of life. And it's telling us that, on the one hand, the second half limits it, right? Terem Yishkavu, Beit Moed Lekol Chai, gives it a sense of urgency. Right? You don't have forever. Right? You want to do tshuva, you have to do it now. And Gemara said, the person has to do tshuva one day before you die. Well, how am I supposed to do that? You don't know when that's going to be, right? Right? So it gives it a sense of urgency, but it doesn't remove the power of the first half of the line. Nisogim im avu. Im avu means if they desire to, it is possible to turn back. Umidar kam shavu terem yishkavu beit moed mekocha. So, after being twice frustrated, as it were, and being seen that tshuva is the way out, we move to the third and final section of the Zemer, where it kind of bursts forth in ecstasy at finding the solution. Al kol ahodecha, kol peh tiyachadecha, potech et yadecha, umaspia lekolcha. Al kol ahodecha, I thank you for everything, for being the source of life, for creating me, for making yourself distant and yet giving me the way to approach you, and even when I fail, for giving me the path of tshuva. Of kol ahodecha, kol peh yachadecha, the whole world has to thank you for this. And not just as an individual do I say this, but this comes together with a tefillah, kol peh yachadecha. Everyone should come to this understanding. And from this it leads straight into a tefillah for the geula. Zechor ahavat kedumim, v'hachayei nir damim, Talia, here's your tefillah for metim, right? Hachayei nir damim, v'karev hayamim, Asher ben Yishai Chai. Who's ben Yishai, of course? The Mashiach, David. That means the Mashiach. Right? Now here we come to that stanza that Ruthie already noticed these multiple allusions in. Re'ei l'gveret emet, shifcha no emet,
Lo ki b'nei chameit v'niachai. Let's talk about the second half first. What's Mishpat Shlomo doing here? Why do we got these two women arguing about the baby here? Clearly a metaphor. Who are the two women arguing? Lo ki b'nei chameit v'niachai. Well, let's not get so specific for a moment, okay? But, yeah, the two women are Am Yisrael and the rest of the world. Okay? The argument is, each one is saying, B'nei chameitu v'nei achai, we have one way of living, and the rest of the world has the other way of living. And one has got the truth, and the other is lying. So we put ourselves into the position of one of those two women, the true woman, and we ask Hashem to act as Shlomo HaMelech, who chooses the real mother. Re'ei l'gderet emet, that's us. Shifcha no emet lo ki b'nei chameitu v'nei achai. Now, when I first realized that this is what it means, I thought that the gveret emet and the shifcha are the same, are one and the same. I thought we were referring to ourselves as the shifcha. Oftentimes when we speak to Hashem, we call ourselves abadim, right? So I thought we were referring to ourselves as the Shifcha who's saying to the others, Lo ki b'nei chameitu v'nei achai. But I noticed, right, because also when you sing it, right, I want to feel like we're screaming out, Lo ki b'nei chameitu v'nei achai. But all the unfortunately I looked at it, read it the other way. That the Geveret is us, and the Shifcha are the nations of the world. And in other words, Re'ei le Geveret emet, asking Hashem to see the truth of us, even though the Shifcha, the other ones, are saying, Lo ki b'nei chameitu v'nei achai. The whole world doesn't see the truth. The whole world is telling us, the whole world is based on falsehood. Only Am Yisrael understands the truth right now. And the rest of the world is coming down on us. And we ask Hashem, Re'ei l'gveretem, right? It's a follow-up from the previous one, right? It started, again, it's a progression. Al kol ahavecha, kol pe'eti achadecha. Eventually, everyone has to come to this realization. So, Zechor Ahava Kidumim, V'chayein Yedamim, V'karev Ayamim, V'sher Ben Yishai Chai. In the process of doing that, it means, see that we have the truth, even though the rest of the world is still screaming, Lo ki b'nei chameitu v'nei achai. They're still arguing, they're lying. They're saying that they have the truth, they have the living child. But it's not true. But then I saw Perush, who pointed out what Ruthie noticed. That there's a double scriptural allusion here. Yes, there's the illusion of the Mishpat Shlomo, that's fairly obvious, ki b'nei chameitu v'nei achai, but the expression Shifcha and Gvira also recall to us Sarah and Hagar. The poet, by using those terms, Gveret Emet and Shifcha no Emet, is putting, as it were, and again, these are two completely different incidents from thousands of years apart. They're putting Sarah as the true mother and Hagar as the false mother. And therefore, according to this perush that I saw, it's not saying what you said, Orit, not Christianity, but rather Yishmael. Hagar is Yishmael, which in a traditional Jewish typology, Yishmael is Islam and the Arabs. Whether that's genealogically true or not is quite questionable, but that's always the typology. The Islam is identified with Yishmael, and Christianity is identified with Rome, which is identified with Edom, which is also probably not genealogically accurate, but an Esav. Right, Yishmael is Islam, and Esav is Christianity. So according to this interpretation, Re'ei l'gveret emet shifcha no emet lo ki v'nei chameitu v'nei achai, I ask Hashem to let the truth that Am Yisrael represents ultimately prevail, even though the rest of the world, and particularly the Muslims, say otherwise. And then we come to this questionable line of Behe. Halo chelkecha mirosh, Chelek damo drosh, shfoch af al rosh ha-sa'ir ha-chai. So, ha-sa'ir ha-chai should already mean something to you. That's also an allusion to, where is there a sa'ir ha-chai? Where? And in Kippur, right? The sa'ir ha-mishaleach. There's two sa'irim, one goes to Hashem, one goes to the Azazel. The Seir Lazazel Shpoch Af Al Rosh HaSeir Achai. What's that doing here? You got to look a little bit deeper. Here again, I saw this in that article. Okay, so the image of the Seir Lazazel is the Seir Achai, and we dump vengeance on him. There's an even more subtle allusion here.
What does it mean, chelek damo drosh? What does it mean, lidrosh dam? Or lidrosh damo? What's lidrosh? Let's start with that. To want, to seek out. Lidrosh damo, it means to avenge one's blood. Right? To seek out his blood, in other words, to punish those who killed someone, is lidrosh damo. I have that in the Tanakh. I didn't find the place, but you can look it up to find it. Chelek damo drosh. What in the world does that mean? You ready to be blown away? What if it didn't say chelek? What if it said chalak? What's chalak? What? That's lechalek. What would chalak mean? Smooth. You ready for this? Chelek demo drosh, shvoch af arosh ha-sa'ir ha-chai. Was there ever an ish chalak and an ish sa'ir? Sa'ir here not meaning the goat? Okay. Hello, chelkecha mirosh, chelek, chalak, demo drosh, shvoch af arosh ha-sa'ir ha-chai. Now put this stanza right after the previous one, which was referring to the Muslims. And remember the man who wrote it, who spent his life running first from the Muslims and then from the Christians. Right? It's beautiful. And it's beautiful. Its beauty is dafka in the subtlety. You have to look and look and look until you find it. And the Sa'ir HaChai, the Sa'il HaZazil, and he referred to Chelek Damot Rosh. And by the way, the real reason that this line may not be there might be because of Christian censorship, according to the article I read. In other words, that's why it's in the early versions and it was later taken out. The Christians did this to a lot of texts in the Middle Ages. We have passages in the Rambam, for example, that were gone, and we only found them in recent decades because the Christians forced you to take things out of the texts. So if there were really two lines in here, and Ibn Ezra was the poet who knew what he had to do, and he put in extra hay to make the thing work, and then the Christians took it out, and nobody noticed because it's still spelled Abraham ben Ezra. Could be, I don't know, but it could be. So now look at the progression. Kol peti achadecha zechor havat kedumim v'karev ha'imim eshe ben yishai chai. Tefillah is bring about those days. How does that happen? Again, remember Avram ibn Ezra running from country to country, a poor man, which he was, by the way, running from persecution. Re'ei l'gveret emet shifcha, that's Yishmael, no emet lo kivenecha meitu v'ni achai, don't listen to her. Halo chelkecha mirosh chelek Chalak, damo drosh, ushfok af arosh ha-sa'ir achai, that's Esav, ekod al api, vefros lecha kapi, etef takpi, v'nishmat kochai. Now, there's one more stanza. And that's the one that Rav Meir Shapiro wrote, that wasn't written by the Ibn Ezra. And the one that he, according to Rav Vosner, sang every Friday night until the Friday night before he died. Here's how that line goes, according to what I saw quoted. And remember where Meir Shapiro was. Remember when he's living. The line is, Ozlat yadenu, tash kochenu, uvat kol tenachamenu, od avichem chai. Ozlat yadenu, what does that mean? Ozlat yadayim? We're helpless. Tash kochenu, we become weak. Uvat kol tenachamenu, Od Avichem Chai, which, by the way, is also an allusion to Pasuk. Who said Od Avicha Chai? Yosef asked Yehuda, Ha'od Avichai? And Yehuda said yes. Ozlat Yadeinu Tash Kochen. Rav Meir Shapiro, living in Lublin in the 1930s, late 1930s, early 1940s, as the Nazis were approaching. Didn't know what was going to happen, but his own yeshiva that he built was destroyed a few years later after he died by the Nazis. Ozlat kochenu, tash kochenu, ozlat yadenu, tash kochenu. We feel helpless. We feel destitute. And again, following the line about the gzeret emet, and he probably didn't know the line about the sa'ir, but the whole in that whole context, and the yearning for the geulah. Ozlat yadenu tash kochenu, And yet he had the emunah to say, Bat kol tenachameinu, a voice coming out of heaven telling us, Od avichem chai, right? Hashem is still alive, and the Geulah will come. Now, about the fact that he didn't sing it last Friday night, I have no idea what that means, but I will tell you one thing. I did a little internet searching just to find out about Meir Shapira, and I found something very interesting. I have no idea if it's connected, but I found a story about his death. It was told by his talmidim. He died at a young age, I think 46. And the story that I read, and again, remember when this is, he died in, I think, 1942. Mamash. He was in Poland. The Nazis were well in power. They were mamash about to begin murdering the Jews of Poland. And again, they came in shortly after his death and destroyed his yeshiva. So he died young. I assume he was sick. I didn't catch the details in the story. But it talks about, this was by an eyewitness, or someone who heard it from an eyewitness. He called his wife over, and he couldn't speak. He was so weak, he had to write down that he wanted all the Talmidim to come, and he called each Talmud over. He couldn't speak even. He just held each Talmud's hand and looked deeply into his eyes. And then he wrote down a note to his wife to tell the Talmidim he wants them to dance. So they started to dance. He wrote down the name of a song, a particular song he wanted them to sing. So they started singing and dancing. And they saw that he was becoming very, very weak, and they realized that he was about to die, and some of them started to cry. And he mustered with all of his energy the ability to say a few more words, and he said in Yiddish, Norach Simcha, only with Simcha, always with Simcha. For which the Talmidim said that he insisted that they keep on dancing, so they continued to dance, and with that he passed away. Those were his last words, Norach Simcha. That's what this person said. I don't know much about Rav Meir Shapira, but I read this story. So here it's pure speculation. But I don't know. I'm just telling you. Avner, who was there, said that he added this line. Azlat yadenu tash kochenu, with a knowledge that even though it looks terrible now, bat kol tenachameinu od avichem chai, that they will come when... And even as he passed away, in the midst of it, perhaps he was, perhaps he was able to see what's going to be a few years down the road. Because the nechama, the bat kol, that sent out the nechama of od avichem chai, terrible things were yet to happen when he passed away. Horrific things. But the sound of that bat kol, Tenachameinu Od Avichem Chai, was only a few years away. When Rav Ozner and the other Talmidim that survived would make it to Bnei Brak and begin to rebuild, the Od Avichem Chai was not that far away. So, I have no idea if he knew that. I have no idea what this story means. But it's a fascinating footnote to the whole thing. So, that's what I see in this Zemer. I'm sure there's more. But next time you sing it, if you're able to think of at least some of these allusions, perhaps it'll be that much more meaningful. I thank you for giving me the opportunity to do this, and next week hopefully we'll do some words meaning.